If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. I'm Adam Weinerb, joined, as always, by fan-sided MLB insider Robert Murray, here on a Thursday with what is usually our Wednesday show, 3 p.m. Eastern. We appreciate you joining us, though. Had to bump it back one day, but would never cancel because of checks, notes, 7,000 crazy things happening in the MLB playoff race. 4 games to go for most teams. The Reds and Pirates are in progress right now, as are a few games that I don't think anyone in our audience is watching. Apologies to Baltimore Orioles and Tampa Bay Rays fans if you're all in on the way your team is ending the season. Sure. But we've got a lot of other teams that I think we are going to focus on here as we talk playoff panic meter. The Boston Red Sox are finally close to clinching their spot. That magic number is down to 1. But where are they going? What is going to happen this weekend at Fenway Park when the Detroit Tigers come to town, who are playing in, I would say, a little bit more dire circumstances? We got to talk Tigers Guardians. We got to talk whatever is going on in the Los Angeles Dodgers bullpen and with their potential playoff roster. The Mets, of course. Can they be caught by one of many 500 adjacent teams in the National League? Is the AL East up for grabs all of a sudden? When I first made this outline, it wasn't. And now it kind of is. What would be the worst collapse if the Mets or Tigers are able to complete it? ABS challenges Alek Manoah free, and probably something in Robert's notebook, and probably some mentions of the Eagles. You got to assume. But we've got a power pack show for you today, getting it to 44 minutes in length. We appreciate everybody joining us on the mega show here on the Baseball Insiders. Robert Murray, how are you doing?
I'm doing a lot better than I was at this time yesterday. I was down horrendous. Long story short, Cooper got neutered and he's wearing a cone. He's sleeping in bed with me and he gets me up a lot by hitting me in the face with his cone. So
yeah,
it all compiled and I was just an absolute shell of myself yesterday. But good to be here as always. We have an absolute load to talk about because, oh boy, the baseball postseason is almost here. There are a lot of division races, a lot of wild card races, a lot of MVP talk. I mean, even waiver wire talk now with Alek Manoah. I mean, I have some thoughts on that one for later on in the show. I think we got some more important things to talk about, but good to be here with you as always, Adam. Go Birds. Happy Thursday. We're past hump day, so I can't wish you a happy hump day. Mm-hmm. But good to be here. Should we just dive right into it? What do you think?
I see no reason not to. Again, join us here once a week, and we'll change that cadence when things really start to heat up. But also, they're heating up now, so we welcome everyone who's joining us. Join us in the Discord between shows. Ask us questions. Robert Murray has a Q&A in the Baseball Insiders Discord coming up right after this. We also publish our content on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com. That's fansided.com/baseball-insiders. And in the Moonshot, which sends the best of the fansided MLB content directly to your inbox, from Robert Murray, myself, Eric Cole on the Prospect Show, and a lot of other great writers on the team who have a lot to say about playoff races that have gotten so crazy that even in my yelling, screaming opening, I forgot to mention the Houston Astros, who are not in the playoff bracket right now. And we got to talk about whether or not that holds. Okay. Where do we start? I think it's the AL Central, because why wouldn't it be? As of this moment in time, the Guardians have held serve on their home field at Progressive Field. They entered this series a game back of the Tigers, but hanging out at the bottom of the wildcard bracket, they won the first game of 3 between the two sides with Tarek Skubal on the mound for Detroit to even things up, and they hold the tiebreaker advantage. They clinched that in the opener. They also won yesterday. The Guardians starting pitching never falters. They could tie a major league record for most consecutive starts with under 2 or fewer earned runs allowed today if they manage to. Parker Messick does the job. The first two of this series were nuts in their own way, but I would say the Tarek Skubal through the legs flip over the first baseman's head on the second consecutive Cleveland Guardians bunt attempt might be the most indelible moment of the Major League Baseball season so far. in terms of what changed, what it represents. One team pressing, trying a little too hard, desperately trying to get it out when you should just hold it and pitch through first and second. Represents what the Guardians are all about. Back-to-back bunts down 2-0 from the 1 and 2 hitters in the lineup to start their most important inning of the season. What are your thoughts on this series so far, what this division race has become, and whether both of these teams make the postseason? Like, one wins the division, one's relegated to the wild card, which looks a little bit likelier now that Houston is faltering, or whether the loser of the division is just out on their luck and we might be talking about one of the biggest collapses. Scratch that. Easily the biggest collapse in the history of Major League Baseball. It's not particularly close if it is completed with the Tigers out of the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, that would be just an absolute collapse of all collapses here. And it's a very, very real thought here when you're looking at it. And it's not like they have a big lead over the Astros in the wild card either. They're only a game ahead of them right now. So even if they continue to lose, and this series against the Guardians is kind of showing exactly where both teams are at right now. Guardians are scrappy. They're really scrappy. And they're not getting the ball out of the infield. And yet they're continuing to post runs against the Tigers, and just they're not the best offensive team, but they just find a way to get it done. And the Tigers are just collapsing, and it's a free fall with seemingly no end in sight here. So even if they do make the postseason, I'm not overly confident that they're going to be able to get that deep into the postseason. It's just they had such a prime opportunity here, and there's so many different ways you can look at it here from the Tigers' perspective. Is they started off the season so great, and then the trade deadline was one of the most disappointing deadlines from a contender in recent memory. Like they made trades for sure, but I mean they got Kyle Finnegan, who has missed time with an injury. Paul Sewald, who has also missed time with an injury. I do want to mention that Finnegan has actually been pretty good when he has been healthy. I mean, they made a minor trade with the Rangers. It was, can't remember the pitcher's name, but it was a small one. And they made some other moves here that just really did not move the needle whatsoever. And in that moment, it felt like everybody was like, what the heck are the Tigers doing? And now you can look at it and be like, oh, crap, like that was somehow even worse than what we actually had expected. And it's been one of the reasons why it's just been such a big free fall. Like it's bad right now. It's really bad. And I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up missing the postseason altogether. Cause who's the Astros' last series against? Do you know off the top of your head?
They're going to Anaheim. And I thought there was a chance that they would shake off whatever had been ailing them. Right. And they go to Sacramento to face the A's. They go to Anaheim to face the Angels. And I was like, well, if the Astros are the Astros, they're going to win all 6 of those games and show you their postseason medal a couple of days early to make sure they get into the dance. They have been lifeless in the first 2 games against the Athletics.
We lost 5 in a row.
Yeah, that is the reason they're out of the bracket right now, because they responded to getting punched in the mouth by the Seattle Mariners by facing an A's team that I thought was a little spoilery and played well against the Red Sox and went on the road to Fenway and did a job there. But, you know, again, if the Astros are the Astros, they're not going to succumb to Luis Severino in the last week of the season and his near 5 ERA. Like, they're just not going to. And they went down lifeless in those first 2. That game is about to start, the 3rd one. We'll see what the Astros do. We'll know what the Astros do before the Tigers and Guardians start. So they'll already know what's in front of them, which could help or hurt, depending on who is feeling the pressure.
No, exactly. And if both of those teams right now, when I say both, I'm talking the Tigers and the Astros right now, they're in very unideal positions right now. But if I'm looking at it, I would much rather be going into that last series facing the Angels than I would. I would feel better about facing the Angels than I would about feeling the Red Sox. So I kind of think it's advantage Astros at this point, despite them being in a free fall. And the other part of this equation is something I've seen asked quite a bit, is if the Tigers miss the postseason, like what exactly does this mean for their leadership there in Detroit, whether it's Scott Harris or whether it's AJ Hinch? I don't think we're going to see either one of those guys let go. Harris is one of the more like highly regarded executives in ball. He's very good at his job. He's well regarded both internally and also externally. obviously his trade deadline was not ideal and he did not end up making a big splash, but honestly, like you look at it, none of the other executives did either. And if your big knock on Scott Harris is that he's kind of risk averse, I mean, you could say that about some of these other guys as well. So I'm not putting the pressure on him quite yet, but I'm putting pressure on him for sure. But I also think he's worthy of staying in Detroit because he's done some good things there for sure. AJ Hinch, I'm going to say the exact same thing about AJ Hinch as I did about Torey Lovello. You would not know what you lost in Hinch if until you let him go, because he's that good. He is extremely highly thought of in that clubhouse. People around baseball love him, and yeah, he's got the Astros connection. Like I get it, but like he's really good at his job. So I can't imagine he goes. You have to imagine there'll end up being a scapegoat because that's just how things like this happen. But I would be really surprised if their two leaders in Harris and Hinch ended up getting let go.
Yeah, and we spent so much time on the trade deadline and we spent so much time on inactivity versus overextending yourself versus filling all holes and whatnot. And sometimes it's just that there are things that are out there controllables. There are things out of your control. The Cleveland Guardians were at a crossroads trying to decide whether or not they were going to trade Stephen Kwan and start over. And I think most of our discussions after the deadline were, okay, they didn't, but maybe they'll revisit it in the offseason. You know, no reason not to call. Clearly the Guardians are stuck in between at this moment in time. But they hold on to Kwan. And they hold on to Emmanuel Clase, but not by choice. Like, if not for Clase's behavior and the pending punishment, like, do you believe they would have found a trade partner for Clase, probably found a trade partner for Kwan? And in that case, we're almost definitely not talking about this.
Oh, I think that's very, very fair to say. And if Clase does not end up getting that suspension or the put on leave, but being put on paid leave, I want to make sure I'm phrasing that correctly. I imagine he would have been traded because this is exactly how it ended up going down at the deadline. It's about a week, maybe a little bit more before the deadline. The Guardians were very willing to talk about Emmanuel Clase. And there's people who were talking to them that thought that the Guardians were going to trade Clase. And my prediction is that if Clase was traded, he was probably going to San Diego. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, Clase is pulled off the market, and these teams don't know exactly what happened. They're like, what's going on? Everyone's trying to information gather, and then it comes out that he was being put on paid leave. So I think he would have been traded. I think Kwan would have been traded. I don't think the Dodgers were ever really close to doing so. And then once the Padres ended up pulling off that trade for Mason Miller, that made getting Stephen Kwan really difficult. Cause I think the Guardians would have wanted their top prospect from San Diego, but he went for Miller obviously. But yeah, and there's so many what ifs from the deadline. It's freaking crazy. This deadline was, a lot of people thought it was going to be a dud. I mean, there was a lot of trades actually, but the what ifs and everything that came from it, played a huge role in kind of determining where we're at right now.
And bringing the seasons of a lot of teams back to life. It's been a common refrain. You know, we've been believers in a lot of different clubs over the course of the season. And you've been a longstanding Padres, you know, backer. I've been a long, you know, believer in the Reds. But there are teams that I like can't quit, right? I can't give up on the Astros until I have to. I won't give up on them yet because I know that if there's a Tigers playoff path, it's going to take them to Fenway Park. They're going to have to go to Boston, play a strong weekend in Boston. They own the tiebreaker if there comes some sort of variety of wins and losses where they and the Red Sox end up on the same wavelength, because obviously that won't happen unless the Tigers win at least one game in Boston this weekend, and that would clinch the tiebreaker. So they don't have it right now, but if they do end up tied, they will, because that will have meant some wins. It's also, there's so much math. Don't you wish there was less math?
What I was so thankful once I was done with high school, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to have to deal with math again. And now here we are.
Writing some stuff on the Yankees magic number earlier in the week, and it was one win to ensure that eventually they would clinch, even though the clinch wouldn't happen that night. And it made my brain hurt for 8 hours. But that's where we are. We're talking about so many different collapses and tight races. One pit stop here to just congratulate the Seattle Mariners on winning the AL West in like such emphatic fashion over the last couple of weeks. Even though they were scorching hot going into that Houston series, I was unable to quit the Houston Astros. Like, despite all the evidence in front of me and the Yordan Alvarez injury of it all and the pitching staff getting decimated and Framber Valdez having a horrible second half and looking checked out and Cam Smith not being what they thought he would be, I still kept saying, look at Zach Cole. You know, they're overturning new leaves. They brought Carlos Correa home. And then the Mariners just torched them. And the two losses against the Athletics further indicate that the Mariners threw the Astros off kilter and were probably getting what we deserved all along. The Mariners are in the running for the top spot in all of the American League after we definitely had private and public conversations about whether they'd make it to the finish line, make it to the postseason at all. How impressed are you by Seattle? Because I think a lot of the tenor of the conversation has been, you know, Houston, depressing, what a slide. But Seattle went and took it to them, and probably have the MVP on their roster. We'll get into that
too. I am extremely impressed. Like, I don't know how it can't be, because, like, as you said, we had conversations privately, I think even on this show as well, where I was saying I'm skeptical with the Mariners, that I need to see it in order to believe it with them, because time and time again, we've gotten our hopes up with the Mariners, and then the Astros have done what the Astros do and came off from under them and gotten it. And the Mariners did it. And they did so in convincing fashion. They did so on the heels of Big Dumper hitting 59 and 60. And like we talked about our pre-show, I still don't know the answer to it. I don't know if 59 or 60 was the upper deck shot. I think it was 59. Holy crap. Like, that ball was over 500 feet. And you cannot convince me otherwise. And I don't know why StatCast is saying that was like 460 or whatever. He absolutely pummeled it. And the Mariners are everything that's good about baseball. Is I was one of the people who, before the season started, I was not really looking at the Mariners to be that much or that big of a threat, because they barely spent in the offseason. They didn't – I mean, they ended up extending Cal Raleigh, but I'm talking like external additions. They really didn't do overly much, but they did it. And they have Cal Raleigh. They have Julio Rodriguez. They have – I mean, just an abundance of talent on that team where they're not just a threat to, I mean, obviously they won the division now, but they're a threat to me to go out and win this entire thing. And that's what happens when you have the MVP and when you have a good supporting cast around him. And it's up to those complimentary pieces around him. And it's also up to Julio Rodriguez to step up in the moment, because if you have two superstar players like that go out and dominate, and you have the pitching staff that can keep teams and keep the runs low, you have the makings of something that could be really special there. So I'm very high in the Mariners. I think they are absolutely one of the top teams to beat in the American League. And I think it's freaking awesome. And you can see that entire city rallying around them. And it's cool to see the Mariners. It's cool to talk about the Mariners and actually have something really positive to say, because I've wanted to for years. And I have a group chat that I'm in with Mariners fans on Twitter, actually. And every once in a while I pop in and say hello and we have a little Q&A or whatever. And those guys, they've gone through it and I know how excited they are. So I just want to give props to the Mariners, because this is a pretty cool deal.
Extremely cool. I wonder, it's an MVP. We won't go too deep. Everybody has gone pretty deep, but I'm a narrative MVP voter. And like, I think the people who want to vote for Cal Raleigh have to acknowledge that they're narrative MVP voters, right? That they are looking beyond the statistics, because the WAR is in Aaron Judge's favor, in the same way that it was in Shohei Ohtani's favor when he and Aaron Judge went head to head a couple of years ago, but Judge hit 62. I advocated for Aaron Judge that year because I thought Judge owned that season. I will advocate for Cal Raleigh this year, because not because of some imperceptible grit or whatnot, but I just think it's two remarkable seasons. Judge fatigue factors in. If you want to go exclusively by WAR and offensive performance outweighing what Raleigh has done offensively, because offense isn't just home runs, and Judge has 177 points higher OPS, I'm there with you. Like, I'm definitely not going to say you are a fool for saying Aaron Judge is the MVP. I just have to stay consistent and say that I was a narrative guy in previous years. I wanted Triple Crown winning Miguel Cabrera to win the MVP over Mike Trout. And I think I would lean Cal Raleigh just because of what his story has meant to this season. And yes, the rigors and the historical significance of having the best offensive catcher season in the history of the game. Would 50 homers have done it? Probably not. I'll acknowledge that 60 makes a difference. And I'll also acknowledge that they're both MVPs. But I think I would have to give it to Cal Raleigh for what he has done. And would I regret it a little bit? I'd probably regret it a little bit, but I don't know where you stand on that.
I am so thankful I'm not voting for the American League MVP, because I saw Jeff Passan say the other day, and I can absolutely echo this. I could vote for either guy and I wouldn't feel good about it, because it's both of them have just been magnificent this year. And I mean, Judge has continued to do what Judge does. Like, he's been incredible. Cal Raleigh is at a historic season for a catcher. Most home runs in Mariners history, most home runs for a switch hitter. I want to check on something here in a little bit. But it's just this entire season by Cal Raleigh has just been incredible. So he would absolutely get my vote here as well. There's two other thoughts I have with the Mariners as well. And the first one I want to mention is I've said it previously about Cal Raleigh, but the job that the Mariners have done, and specifically extending him before the season started, they signed him for 6 years for $105 million. Had they not done that and they let him go to free agency or just waited this out, we're talking about a price tag that would have been significantly higher than that. And how much higher than that, I don't know. But that was a very smart and savvy move by them, keeping a foundational player, someone that they thought had tremendously higher upside than he had previously shown. He's still been a very good player, don't get me wrong. But this season's exceeded their expectations by their wildest dreams. I mean, 60 home runs for a catcher is unbelievable. So I want to give a tip of the hat there to Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander and that ownership group there, because again, we haven't been able to do that much, and I want to give them their flowers when it's due. And then the other part of this is, what would happen if they didn't get Jorge Polanco in the offseason? Because there was a moment there, like, I thought he was going to Houston, and it's well documented at this point, and it was something that I was tracking behind the scenes. I know it was something that others were tracking, because people talk in baseball, and all of a sudden he ended up going to Seattle, and he's been incredible for them. And if even Justin Hollander went on the record and said, like, if he ended up going to the Astros this year and he had this kind of season for them, that would have been for lack of a better phrase, a gigantic kick to the balls. Cause they had, they added him last year and they had really high hopes for him. He obviously did not live up to that, but they still felt like that his upside was there for sure. They brought him back, got him at the last moment, and he's been incredible for them. So that move and him coming to Seattle very well may have been the difference in them winning the division, or been the difference between winning the division and not winning the division. So it was under the radar at the time. I think I scrutinized it. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but they were right. I was wrong. And this is the episode where we're 24 minutes in and I've eaten a lot of crow. So yeah, this is why I try not to do hot takes, but I'll always admit when I'm wrong.
Polanco struggled with injury and ballpark fit last year. I did not understand him choosing to return to Seattle, let alone Seattle's interest in him. And now it makes a lot more sense. They're getting the player they thought they were getting year one in what turned out to be year two, two separate 1 year deals. Baseball is crazy sometimes, and it certainly is in this instance. One more American League thought before we move on to the wild and wacky bottom of the NL wild card. I thought the Red Sox might be a more interesting talking point before the week actually occurred. They seem fine now. Like the comment said, they will clinch with just one win or an Astros loss. Their playoff spot now seems secure. After I saw some WEI Red Sox hosts say they thought the Red Sox were going to go 0-6 this week. I know your team better than you do. But with the Red Sox success comes the Jays failure. We have to talk about that. I didn't expect us to be talking about that, but the American League East, the door is open. The Boston Red Sox showed it's almost like for anybody worried about the Red Sox potential in the postseason, like, they lined up Giolito and Garrett Crochet and Bayo for this three-game series. They treated it like the wild card series. except for Garrett Crochet would go first. And they won the first game. Blue Jays offense was silent. They dominated the second game behind Garrett Crochet, as they should have. And now Bayo tonight. The Toronto Blue Jays should have finished off the New York Yankees about 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, a week ago at least. And that is now tied. The Blue Jays hold the tiebreaker. There was a glitch in the MLB app that showed the Yankees in first place that I know a lot of Blue Jays fans were mad about last night. But Blue Jays hold the tiebreaker. Blue Jays win the East if the East ended today. But somehow, some way, after the Yankees' abominable defense, bad head-to-head, horrible play against teams over 500, they righted the ship during those 2 weeks in September against that gauntlet of the Astros, who now look interesting, the Jays, Tigers, who the Tigers won a series from the Yankees, and the Red Sox. And all of a sudden, here the two teams are, even up with four to play. The Jays and Red Sox have one more. The Rays come into Toronto. The Rays definitely don't want to see the Jays succeed. The Orioles come into New York. They don't want to see the Yankees succeed. They moved Rodgers around to pitch the opener. Are you shocked that this happened? And do you agree with George Springer that this is rigged in favor of the New York Yankees and that rigged umpires are being sent to Toronto to wreak havoc?
I don't think it's rigged, but there's like, I watched that replay a billion times. Like that was
bad.
That was a fair ball. And like, he had every right to be mad. And then what was it? The next pitch or shortly thereafter?
Pitch.
Yeah. I mean, that was brutal. I mean, that was awful. I mean, it wasn't a strike, and like, he had every right to be dropping the F bombs and the other expletives that he dropped. Like, I would have been livid too. And I would have been asking those same questions if I was him, but he is not it's not rigged, but this is why that the ABS is going to be a thing next year, especially with the balls and strikes. So we'll see exactly how that goes next year, but that was a brutal miscall there. But I kind of in the back of my head a couple of weeks ago thought that the Blue Jays had it wrapped up in the American League East. And I was not really like, we talked about it on this show and we were talking about how they were probably the team to beat in the American League. And then all of a sudden, now this happened and absolute madness. I don't know exactly what to expect here with that. My guess is that the Yankees end up pulling it out somehow. But never in my wildest dreams did I expect this race to be coming down to the last few games. I also saw, what was it on, in baseball images that precede unfortunate events. It was the Blue Jays Twitter account talking about how I think they were about five games above the Yankees or something like that. And well, obviously we see how that aged now. So not exactly great. This is why we don't do victory laps. Look at the Los Angeles Rams against the Philadelphia Eagles this past weekend. It only took 28 minutes to get an Eagles. That's gotta be a record, but this one is totally fascinating. I don't know what to expect. Again, I think that the Yankees end up getting it, but I'm not overly confident in that. Knowing how my predictions have aged, congrats to the Blue Jays.
I think tonight's the game. Like if Toronto and this bullpen game can get Brian Bayo and somehow edge past the Red Sox and halt Boston's clinch, then I think Toronto holds off the Yankees. Conversely, I think tonight against the White Sox is huge for the Yankees, who are going to be, Baltimore is going to bring it. And I think the Rays are going to bring it as well to Toronto, but I think the Orioles are a higher quality opponent right now, especially given what Baltimore has lined up. So if the Yankees are going to do this, they have to be one up in the division entering the weekend and then go from there and hope maybe each team takes two out of three. Maybe there's another gift, but they have to control what they can control. The Yankees can't really lose a game if they want to pull off something improbable like this. Yeah. And we will see if they do, but it is crazy that we are even talking about it. And that Michael Kay and Buck Martinez's war of words is even still relevant as we head into the final four games of the regular season. Now on to the National League, and we've got several fun quick hits as well. We got a lot to get to by the end of the show. I don't want to lose it. The New York Mets. I went from writing about their despair and collapse when I first put this together to watching them come back from 6-1 down against the Cubs on Tuesday. And to me, almost cementing their playoff spot and proving that they had more talent in that room than the other teams fighting for the spot did, to now watching the Reds go down cold yesterday, but up 2-0 right now. Reds lose to Paul Skenes, technically a playoff game. Paul Skeens and the Pirates playing a playoff game, almost, kind of, sort of. I don't make the rules. That's Paul Skeens' first playoff game, in my opinion. He was great. Yeah. The Mets going down icy yesterday with all the momentum in the world coming off of Francisco Alvarez's home run, showing up but not doing any more than that. The Diamondbacks winning the first game against the Dodgers, rallying against the Dodgers bullpen yesterday, but getting shut down by Roky Sasaki and Clayton Kershaw in the bullpen, and also Blake Treinen in extra innings. Wild, wacky. The Reds and D-backs are still a game behind the Mets, but the Reds are ahead in a game they cannot afford to lose right now. If the Mets do not make the postseason, is that more disappointing given their payroll, given where they sat, given all the resources they sank into this, than if the Tigers pull off what would be a by the numbers larger collapse? And if the Mets do make it into the final wild card spot and stave off disaster, but just go to LA and get beaten, isn't that also pretty bad?
It's not great. And I mean, if, okay, so I'll say this, if they end up missing the postseason altogether, that's worse than the Tigers' collapse. If they make the postseason and get bounced by the Dodgers, then that's still bad, but it's not as bad as missing the postseason altogether. So yeah. I think there's different categories, there's different levels to this, but this is, as I like to say, this is a massive oi, and this should not be a thing with the Mets, but alas, like, here we are. And their offseason additions, the Frankie Montas one can be that obviously did not work out. They had Sean Manaea sidelined for a long time. They had so many different things kind of go wrong this season, and it's got them obviously in a wild card spot now, but they're one game ahead of the Diamondbacks and they're one game ahead of the Reds. So this thing is freaking close right now. It's very close. I think they end up pulling it off, but the fact that we're still talking about the Diamondbacks, who had this massive sell-off at the deadline. I wrote them off as soon as that happened, as soon as they ended up having their big collapse before, and people earlier in the season were calling for Torrey Lovello's job, which that was stupid. That should have never been a conversation at all. But the Diamondbacks are continuing to linger around. They've had just tremendous performances all around. The Reds, they are going to be a team to really watch, even right now, obviously, but going forward. And the job that Tito Francona has done there in Cincinnati, they have every reason to be optimistic about the direction of that franchise, because he's got them going in a good direction. But the reason I believe in the Mets is their star power, and also the lack of panic overall in that organization. And it starts with that leadership. And I've talked about their leadership group for a long time now. We've seen it with David Stearns, and like, he's very good at what he does. But Carlos Mendoza is the voice of the clubhouse. Like, he controls exactly what the demeanor is in that locker room. Obviously, they have veterans there, but he has kept a very consistent message there with that team. And people around that organization have really praised him for that. And it's kind of kept them even keeled, I would say. And he's done a good job navigating what's a really difficult situation. And I believe in the Mets, but man, this is not what I expected, not what anybody else around the game expected when the Mets signed Juan Soto. To me, they were a World Series team. They still could be. But that path to get there is pretty difficult right now.
The expectations are World Series team. Don't get it twisted. We cannot move the goalposts into development year now that they are where they are. They are still a team that expects to be one of the premier franchises in Major League Baseball. And it's going to be up to them to show whether this season is a blip or the start of something pretty disconcerting. And the veteran leadership they need to bring in the rotation next year to reinforce the kids has to be better. Totally. You cannot count on Kodai Senga. I think they did. I think they made that mistake. You cannot believe so wholeheartedly in your development lab, which you got to believe, but you got to bring in at least one established arm who isn't as risky as Frankie Montas. I think they thought that was Sean Manaea based on last year's buy-in. And when that didn't go according to plan, they were really holding on for dear life. And here we are. Like, they could just use a Jose Quintana next year. We'll see what the pivot is. We'll see if they decide to go big. There's a world where they traded for Garrett Crochet this past offseason. That didn't happen. So how big do they go?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned Jose Quintana, because this was not on my mind, but it should have been. But in the offseason, like, he was there for the taking, and he ended up signing for a super cheap contract to Milwaukee. Some of it was deferred, like a good majority of it was deferred, and any team could have done that, but especially the Mets. And at the deadline, it was about, what, 2-3 weeks before the deadline, I had heard rumblings that the Brewers could trade Quintana or just one of their veteran arms. And I checked on it. I was like, yeah, it was possible, but the message it would send to the clubhouse would not be a good one, because he is extremely well respected in that locker room. He's good for the young pitchers. The difference that he's made with them, it was greater than any return that they could have asked for in a trade. So the Brewers kept him, and the Mets had him last year. They reaped the rewards for it. He was good for them. He pitched a pivotal game in Milwaukee in the postseason for him last year, and then they just made zero effort to re-sign him. So that was totally baffling. That was a miscalculation by David Stearns, who is typically very good at evaluating pitching and maximizing it. Yeah, that was just overall kind of a disaster for them, just overall there.
That's how you get to where they are now. They need to learn some lessons from this season, no matter how it ends, unless they make it to the World Series and win it, in which case, no lessons learned, keep doing what you're doing. But feels less likely now for sure, and I feel for all Mets fans and Tigers fans going through what they're going through. It has been a disaster to watch from afar. We will be back next week, of course, talking about the playoff matchups, making our predictions. That's where we stand right now, but there's more baseball to unfold. Couple of big news items to hit from the week as well. Overwhelming week. Oh, by the way, ABS challenges are official now. Like, if there wasn't enough baseball for you this past week, it's now we have a challenge system. Fun drama from the challenge system that I don't know if I was expecting. Two challenges per game. Obviously, you retain them if you win them, but you got to make the signal immediately. There's no manager going to the dugout talking to his gurus and looking back at you saying, oh, yeah, go for it. We just watched slow-mo replay. We know exactly what's going on. Only the pitcher, catcher, and batter can challenge, which is good because I don't want any right fielders challenging in the middle of a game. But the players are responsible. Let's say somebody challenges what they believe is a ball in the first inning and they're wrong, and then you lose one of your two challenges and you're on edge for the rest of the game. Your teammates probably aren't pumped that you made a rash decision and did so incorrectly. I'm glad we're not going full robot umpires. I'm glad it's a transition to challenge rather than just getting rid of the humans entirely. Feels like a good check on their power. But what are your thoughts here? I'm mostly excited, and I like the wrinkles that it brings.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it too. And people who like have been around it say it's been very smooth. So we'll see if that translates to the major league game, but the layers that come with this and the fact that you can't discuss it with the dugout before, it's just between the batter, the pitcher and the catcher. Like that is a really unique angle. And I feel like you could end up seeing some very emotional decisions here that could end up really kind of upsetting some folks throughout a team. So I'm very curious to see exactly how that one plays out, but I think it'll be good for the game. I think it'll make the decisions smarter, more informed. But I also wonder like what it's going to end up doing for pace of the game. It's not going to end up impacting it overly too much, but that's been a big focal point for Major League Baseball in recent years, is like improving the pace of the game just so it's not as long and try to draw in more people. But I think overall it'll be a good thing for them.
I hope that we get, at the very least, a situation where the challenges are shown on the big board and the whole crowd gets to do what they used to do at tennis challenges, where they see the line and they go,
that would be awesome. That'd be cool. Yeah, we would like that.
That's what I want. So, yeah, don't slow down the pace, but just make it exciting. And again, you know, hitters like Aaron Judge, who've been riddled with low strike calls for a long time now, maybe that changes. You know, maybe framing is a little bit less prized and defensive intangibles get to the forefront a little bit. That's what people asking for Kyle Raleigh to be MVP are asking for, you know, the rigors of catching. Maybe we put more pride in what a catcher has to do that does not necessarily get measured by stealing strikes, but instead is all about communication and, of course, literally keeping your hands on the ball. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
No, it is. It is a lot of fun, and I'm very anxious to see the overall impact of this. There's going to be so much. Like, as I can just picture the drama that ends up playing out with this, and yeah, we'll see. But I think it's going to overall be a very good thing. I also have the hiccups right now, so this could be a very interesting time to speak. So I'm going to pass it over to you, Adam, because I need to take a sip of my drink real quick.
Good. Well, thankfully, we are getting to the end of the show, but a couple more heaters to touch on. Clayton Kershaw comes in, throws the ninth inning of yesterday's game. When he announced his retirement, I think a lot of people locked in that he would be making his final start at Dodger Stadium. Probably wouldn't be making a start in the postseason, might not be on the playoff roster at all. The Dodgers bullpen is not solved. If it is, it's going to involve Kershaw and it's going to involve Roky Sasaki, who Tom Verducci wondered last week whether he would be the closer yesterday before yesterday's game. Then he came in and was dominant. So he's got to be in that bullpen. Is Kershaw in your Dodgers bullpen when they open up their playoff run?
I mean, I feel like they probably did that for a reason. And who could have seen that coming? Like, closer Clayton, like, okay, picture this, and maybe this, well, okay, we're just going to run through this, and I'm not going to put any disclaimers here. Game 7 of the World Series, Dodgers have the lead, and Kershaw comes out in the ninth inning to close it out. Like, how crazy would that be for a World Series, but also for him to end his career with possibly doing that, and for the silence of critics once again to who have doubted him about his postseason abilities. And I mean, I have a lot to say about that, but I think that'd be a really cool end of his career. So I think it's definitely possible. We saw it. He was good. I would not rule it out by any means of the imagination. And if you can have a bullpen where you have Kershaw, Sasaki, Blake Treinen, I mean, whoever else, and you try to avoid Tanner Scott, that's not a bad thing for them. And who would have thought we'd ever be saying that about Tanner Scott? Because as soon as they signed him, as soon as they signed Kirby Yates in the offseason, they were all saying, yeah, we don't have to worry about this bullpen anymore. Like, they thought they had this wrapped up. And, well, Scott's blown, what, 10 saves now? Not ideal. Not what you want. And definitely not what you want from a guy who's making, what is it, like $17 million a year or somewhere around that ballpark?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's signing has been an overall disaster, and I feel bad for him because it's not like he's trying to suck. There was some folks, I think it was in the Discord, who were calling him like a Padres plant or something. I'm just like, no. I mean, the guy wants to win. He's a competitor. He's been very good, and he's been one of the best relievers in baseball for years now. And this season has just not even come close to going according to plan for him or the Dodgers in that regard.
No, there's a lot left to be answered by them. Final thought before we sign off, the Alek Manoah DFA that shocked, I think, a lot of people outside Toronto who were wondering what the move would be. Did not see Anthony Santander for Alek Manoah swap in the last week of September. Thoughts on him ending up on the waiver wire and what Major League Baseball maybe thinks of him at this point in time?
I was stunned by it. And I obviously it's not gone according to plan with him in recent years. Like, there's been a lot of different hurdles and obstacles and things that have just gone kind of awry for him, but he's still a very talented guy. And my first thought, you get him in that Brewers pitching lab and maybe you can have some stuff cooking there. Cause you don't know what's going to end up happening in the off season. Where do you move Freddie Peralta? I mean, I would expect Brandon Woodruff to return, but he's also hurt now. And you got to wonder what that injury is going to look like for him, considering his overall injury history. So they like having depth. And to me, there would be no better candidate to go try to bounce their career back in that pitching lab than Alek Manoah. So that was my first thought. I have no idea if the Brewers are interested. I would imagine they probably talked about it internally because that's just what they do overall in Milwaukee. But that'd be a pretty fun fit. I don't know if you've had any thoughts in your head about that, Adam, or what, but that was where my head was at.
I was stunned. I mean, 2022 suddenly feels like a long time ago. The hot mic moment in the All-Star game feels like forever ago. I mean, I can't stop thinking about a team like the Angels. It just feels like angel bait, but you hope for Manoah's sake that he ends up in a place with a lab like the Brewers who really want to take a chance and figure and have a plan in mind before the inevitable sort of stunning claim. So looking forward to learning where he lands, looking forward to learning so many more things. Please head on over to the Discord if you want to chat with Robert Murray and I between shows. That's coming up right now at 4 p.m. Eastern. We have another playoff preview, During the middle of the wild card round next week, we're going to be back here 3 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. We'll talk about what we're seeing, what we're predicting, what we're projecting, and maybe we'll even be talking about the Cincinnati Reds in the postseason or the Diamondbacks instead of the Mets. How about that? But we'll never know until the next 4 days play out. For Robert Murray, I'm Adam Weiner. Thanks for joining us wherever you join us today. Take care.